Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's still real to me, damn it.
Everybody, welcome to this week's edition of the Still Real to Us Show, episode number 662 for October 20th, 2022. Welcome to the NXT Halloween Havoc preview and predictions edition of SRTU. I am one half of the show. I am Jeff Peck, joined every single week by my co-host, the one only Dr. Trey Franklin. Dr. Trey, I got to admit, it's pretty cool saying we're doing a Halloween Havoc preview prediction show, my friend.
Yeah, I didn't know we were doing this.
Yeah, it's this Saturday.
I knew it was coming up, but we had been kind of skipping NXT events for a while, and
They're back to the premium live events and not doing the stuff where it was like these specials.
Yeah, I was so focused on, you know, MJF.
Crown Jewel.
And Crown Jewel, because every time I think of Crown Jewel, I just think of Titus tripping.
Yep.
You know, I just kind of threw me off my game, but I'm actually really happy because I actually watched NXT the last couple of weeks, so I feel like I'm pretty caught up on the program right now.
All right, cool. So we will preview and predict Halloween Havoc towards the end of the show. It's back to as a premium live event. I don't think this has been – I think this is the first time it's been a premium live event / pay-per-view since they brought it back in 2020. I think every other time it was like a special on NXT TV.
Did we get one at WrestleMania?
Get one what? A Halloween Havoc?
Like a PL? No, like a premium.
They were Stand and Deliver.
Okay, yeah.
And so we also had War Games. They have done that. And then there was one recently, Worlds Collide.
Okay.
Right.
So I was confused by what you were saying. It's, we haven't done Halloween Havoc as a premium live event.
Well, they had that stretch during the pandemic where they were not, especially with the reboot, they were not doing premium live events. Like they were just doing these specials on NXT TV, which is, you know, a calling card for AEW. They do like these special Dynamites, like Winter is Coming and Beach Break and, you know, Grand Slam, for instance. And NXT was taking a page out of AEW's book. But this is the first time I think they brought back Halloween Havoc in 2020. And then I think 2020 and 2021 were just specials that were airing on the USA Network. This is the first time it's a standalone Saturday. You're going on Peacock, which Kevin Owens loves to say, premium live event.
By the way, I don't know if you ever listened to the You Didn't Know podcast with Brian James, but I love how he says it. He says Peacock.
Really?
So, yes.
No, I'm a huge fan of Road Dogg, but I have not listened to his podcast yet.
It's not bad. It's kind of, I mean, it's weird for me because Cassio Kidd is his co-host, and Cassio's right here, in, like from Huntsville, and you know, I've met the guy a few times. We're Facebook friends, and we exchange jokes every so often. So it's weird hearing somebody on a podcast, you know, for all my friends and family who are listening today. but every time he refers to the Peacock Network, he says Peacock. Wow. So I don't know if that's how he pronounces it or if it's just a rib, but since he's been saying it that way, I've been going with Peacock as well.
Well, back to the Halloween Havoc. It did air in 2020, 2021. That was the first time in 2020 it had aired since 2000 when it was a WCW event. So NXT Halloween Havoc premium live event this Saturday on Peacock, as Road Dogg, Jesse James, and now Dr. Trey, now I, will probably refer to here on SRTU moving forward. Opening up this week's edition of the show, Dr. Trey, we're going to open up some AEW news and notes here. One being that AEW has made another contract extension official. That is with current Ring of Honor World Champion and former AEW World Champion Chris Jericho. He is now signed with the company through December 2025. Jericho, now 51 years old, will continue his roles in the ring on commentary and mentor young talent, but he will also serve as a producer and creative advisor going forward. There's more about this story that I want to peel away here just momentarily, Dr. Trey. But your first thoughts here is now Chris Jericho is remaining with AEW until 2025.
I mean, it makes a ton of sense. He's one of the biggest names in the company. The guy is arguably, you know, on some people's Mount Rushmore. He's one of the greatest of all time. He's got a very creative mind, as you can see by the constant reinventions of himself. He's been able to adapt. Before Jericho came to AEW, you heard him talking, I don't want to say talking smack about some of the guys that AEW signed, but, you know, the I don't get it about Orange Cassidy, or I don't get it about this guy. And then he works him. He's like, oh, this guy makes a ton of sense, and it works. So he's actually able, he's actually kind of reinvent himself to adapt to the newer era style of wrestling and make it work. So it just makes a ton of sense on all levels for AEW to keep, you know, one of their biggest stars around and give him a voice in creative, because, you know, some of the other voices have been kind of silenced.
So this is one of the big moves that AEW has made in the last couple of weeks. The other big move was Jon Moxley was under a contract extension for several years as well. In both of these extensions, it was noted that both Moxley and Jericho were taking on new roles with the company, more behind the scenes, mentoring, producing, coaching, what have you. You know, their minds are being used for the greater good of AEW going forward. We've heard a lot about Jericho, Moxley, and Bryan Danielson leading the ship post AEW All Out behind the scenes for the company. And it got me wondering, Dr. Trey, if we think that maybe these deals is signaling some sort of decision being made on the CM Punk, Kenny Omega, Young Bucks situation. There is an update to Ace Steel, which I'll get to here momentarily as well. But is any of that running through your head at all? Like, I'm seeing this and I'm going, should I read the tea leaves on this? This is now the second big contract extension. This is two of the three reported leaders behind the scenes in AEW. Has AEW made some sort of decision on the future of all those parties involved in that all-out post-media scrum fight? Am I thinking too deep in this?
Maybe a tad. And the only reason why is when you have somebody of Jericho's lineage and his accomplishments, like, why would you not want him as an influence on your younger talent? I mean, the guys, I mean, for the, you know, you can say he's jumped around, but really he hasn't. He was in, you know, WCW for, you know, a few years, then WWE. He never went anywhere else until he finally got, you know, AEW, and then he's stuck to AEW. And like, the guy's loyal. If people are good to him, he's good to those people. And like I said, like, why would you not want a guy like Chris Jericho helping mentor and teach your younger talent? Especially Jericho being a smaller size guy and able to adapt to a big man's world and how to tell a good story. Same with Jon Moxley. John's fantastic when it comes to those hardcore hitting matches, the strong style, all those things. But he's just got a great mind and he's a good person. Like, why would you not want somebody like that? Now, you maybe are hedging your bets if you have to let some of the people from that group go, whether it's Kenny or the Bucks or whoever. Maybe you are hedging your bets a little bit, but wouldn't you want as many talented people on your roster that can help out your younger talent for as long as possible? And that's Jericho and Moxley along with Omega and the Bucks, or without Omega and the Bucks. At least you're you know, building your foundation of those core principles and teachings that you want your younger guys to have.
Yeah, it got me really wondering, like, okay, is this whole EVP thing done? Is the Bucks and Omega not going to have a bigger role? Should they come back? Is CM Punk done? Is he got to have a lesser role? Should he come back to AEW? Though there's some vague stuff about his behind-the-scenes role for AEW. There may be a may have been something, but we never really was detailed by most publications that cover professional wrestling. We do have an update on this entire situation, Dr. Trey, as according to Dave Meltzer in the latest Wrestling Observer Radio from earlier this week, Ace Steele has reportedly been released from his AEW contract with his time coming to an end at the start of this past week. Obviously, he was involved with the backstage altercation, reportedly bit Kenny Omega. There were photos of a bite marks on Kenny Omega when he was doing promotion around the video game in Japan. You know, you figured that there'd be some sort of shoes that started to drop from this at points. It was like, okay, are we ever going to get a resolution? Are we ever going to hear an update? This is the first real big update because here we are 6-7 weeks later. There's been a release done and it is Ace Steele. Is he the fall guy? Is this the first shoe to drop? Should we expect more people to leave? Or do we think the Elite and CM Punk are coming back as they were both mentioned for the very first time and even video shown of them? And this past Wednesday's edition of AEW Dynamite.
For one, I'll put it this way. Before that promo that Ace Steele came out and cut with Punk in the ring, when Punk was kind of feeling sorry for himself and Ace came out and pumped him up, I had never really heard of Ace Steele. I don't know if you have, but I mean, I didn't really know him. And that being said, it does make the most sense for, hey, the guy with the least amount of clout to kind of be the fall guy. Plus, when you hear the stories, like, he was the one throwing the chair. He's the one that bit Kenny Omega. The biting, I don't have an issue with because if you're in a street fight, I don't know if Jeff, if you've ever been in a fight, but when you're in a fight, anything goes. So if you're in a fight, you bite somebody, I don't have an issue with it. But, you know, throwing chairs, like, that's a little over the top. And he seems to have been the one that did the most malicious actions during that fight, if that makes sense. So if you're going to go the route of like, hey, we got to blame somebody and you know, somebody's got to be the fall guy. That's the guy with the least amount of clout who costs us the least amount of money makes the most sense because worst case scenario, he sues the company for, you know, his firing and they just go, hey, so we owed you the least amount of money. So we'll just give you this to go away. So it makes sense if that's the way they go. We still are on the heels of the rumors of the Bucks reaching out to WWE to see if there'd be an interest in them if something were to go awry. But like you said, you're posting videos of them now, you're referencing them on Dynamite. It does kind of feel like, hey, let's fire Ace and then we can kind of work the other parts out going forward.
And then finally, the last leg of these updates here come to us from Wrestling Inc. and Fightful Select. Fightful Select reported Wednesday afternoon that their sources had confirmed Ace Steele's departure, which was originally reported Wednesday morning by Dave Meltzer. According to these sources, the backstage consensus seems to be that Steele would have been fired even sooner if not for pending legal ramifications. Multiple talents in AEW, including one close to Steele, saw the incident as the writing on the wall for him, especially after Steele's bike marks on Kenny Omega remained visible when Omega was seen in Japan soon after. One source told Fightful that, quote, bringing Steele back into the locker room with or without longtime friend and protege CM Punk would have caused a lot of frustration, while another simply said, quote, biting people bad. So, yeah, it's the first possible movement towards a resolution. Like I mentioned before, the Elite were mentioned. Punk was in the montage of former ROH champions. Fightful confirmed that there had been movement and even optimism regarding the returns of the involved parties and that Punk, Omega, and the Bucks had been in contact with AEW more than they had in the last month. This suggests a change from a week ago when it was reported that Punk, Omega, and the Bucks had heard little, if anything, from AEW since being sent home. Fightful was quick to know that their information regarding the return of these four was, quote, was left vague, end quote, and context was missing regarding any recent communication. So lots of question marks still. This is still a major legal process that's taking place in AEW. I do have to laugh because if this was in WWE, we'd have probably have updates like every couple of days, which kind of gives you credit to how ironclad the behind the scenes can be for AEW as opposed to other times when Sammy Guevara and Andrade get into a fight. That's the latest update there, Dr. Trey. Who knows if we're in good graces? Who knows if it's positive movement, negative movement? They were mentioned, they weren't mentioned, forgotten, remembered. It's still a big thing. I mean, you'd figure hopefully some sort of end results coming here soon, and the direction of where this goes is anybody's guess at this time, I guess.
I was like, so that direct quote, wasn't that bite marks bad?
They put down biting people bad.
Oh, biting people bad.
Now, biting people bad. Yeah.
If the person asks for it, is it still bad?
I guess if it's like, hey, could you do this? Yeah, yeah, I'll do it. And they do it. It's no big deal because there's their, you know, general consensus that it was agreed upon. But in this instance, it was not, right? I mean, a dog may have been involved to rescue, but even though the dog wasn't being bit, didn't conduct the biting. We could do an entire podcast on just the bite alone.
Oh, there we go. There's our next spinoff podcast, the biting podcast. Yep.
I'm sure there's one out there.
It's weird that I literally said, you know, maybe 2 minutes ago that the biting during the fight doesn't bother me, but I've literally had to use that phrase, biting people bad, to Sammy Franklin, and then my dog got attacked by two other dogs and had bite marks all over him. So biting is bad. So I'll go with that, unless she asks for it, and then it's okay. But it is weird that it's now, we're at what, like almost 60 days?
Mm-hmm. Almost 2 months, yeah.
Yeah, and there's still not a resolution. I mean, I understand the legal system moves slowly, but you kind of think in something like this, especially with the individuals who are involved, maybe, you say what, four of the top six guys in the
entire company? Yeah, absolutely.
We can't get a resolution to quicker, especially when it's a privately held company. This is not a public company. It's privately held, which is one of the reasons why we don't get the media leaks out about stuff unless they want it out. It's just surprising it's taken this long to kind of come to a resolution on it, and we're still not there yet. I mean, but seeing, you know, Punk in the Ring of Honor, you know, title graphics help because he wasn't there a couple weeks ago. So they've added that in. You know, referencing the Elite on Dynamite, that's something that hasn't been done. They've danced around it so many times whenever the trio's tag belts are on the line. It does kind of feel like this is coming to a head here at some point. And it kind of feels like the Vince John Laurinaitis fallout where, you know, early on we were all like, oh, Johnny Ace is going to take the fall for everything. It kind of feels like that here where it's like, all right, Ace Steel's going to take the fall for it, and then, you know, the other four will eventually be back in the company. I still have a hard time thinking that any of those four guys will not be back because, you know, there's so much money now involved with a CM Punk-Kenny Omega matchup or CM Punk and somebody against the Bucks. Like, there's so much money involved in that now if you can actually somehow make it work. So if we can see Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle have, like, a 4 or 5 month-long feud, the Bucks, the Elite, and CM Punk could work out a way to make this work.
Well, we did initially hear, right, that there was no interest in doing business between all these parties, that this was very much real and blah, blah, blah. Time certainly heals all wounds. Who knows the legal direction of this all? There was discussion that maybe even suing one another in this entire thing. You know, we don't know any better now if this is closer to the finish line, if it's closer to a positive rather than a negative. If it's something where all these parties can continue to coexist in AEW, who knows? I can't stress this enough because in today's professional wrestling landscape and with the journalisms being so much better than they were when we first started this podcast, even that we don't have regular updates on this, to me is a big props to AEW because they're under a lot of scrutiny with a lot of their behind-the-scenes stuff right now, but this is one that isn't getting out there, and that tells me that there's some major legal ramifications involved because people are not talking about this whatsoever. Before we get into the next topic here, Dr. Trey, because it is sticking with AEW, but I'll just quickly ask this. Do you think the AEW product is better, the same, or worse without the parties involved from the All Out Media Scrum issues?
I think it all comes down to the CM Punk question. Like, do you think the show's better when Punk's on it or when Punk's not? Because the Bucks, for the most part, haven't really been in a main event angle in quite a while. Kenny's been off TV for he was only back for what, 3 matches, you know,
basically.
And that was it. So it's like, it kind of comes down to how you feel about CM Punk. And right now you're seeing other guys step up. So I would say it's about the same. I don't think it's any better or any worse. But that being said, with everybody else stepping up, then if you add these guys into the mix, it can only make the product better. So I don't think they've missed a beat without them, as they've had to do some creative storytelling and creative omissions to get around it. But, you know, you're seeing the Moxley step up, Jericho stepping up, the stuff with Daniel Garcia, the Wheeler Yuta. Like, you're seeing a lot of people step up into bigger roles without these guys. So the product actually has been pretty steady, even without 4 of the 6 biggest names in your company.
One of the names who has stepped up, MJF. He returned it All Out, and boy, did he come in a great time, because he has really helped out All Elite Wrestling following this big post All Out fight that took place. He cuts an emotional promo on William Regal on Dynamite this past week. A very memorable promo, you know, in my feeling, Dr. Trey, when you look back at top promos from Dynamite, top promos from MJF, top promos from this year, I think you're going to mention this one in that discussion. I loved it. Great story being told. And, you know, it leads to a bigger story that we're starting to see on AEW television recently, where it feels like this slow turn of MJF turning babyface is taking place, just because he's telling the truth. It's something that's people can relate to, and whether he's calling them, you know, pores, or he's telling a story that people can, like I said, relate to, people are still getting behind him right now. Your thoughts on the emotional promo cut on William Regal this past Wednesday?
I thought it was fantastic. And I love when people use elements of the truth in their promos. And there's an old saying, and I kind of went off this when I first got into wrestling, was every great heel is usually telling their version of truth. And that's what I've always done. Like, if I'm cutting a promo, everything I'm saying, I fully believe. And it's easier to buy into your own bullshit if there actually is truth behind what you're saying. And I think that's what makes MJF one of the great storytellers and promo guys in wrestling, is that he buys into everything he says. And whether it's, you know, keep it with the kayfabe character or whatever it is, everything he says, he fully buys into. And what that ends up doing is it ends up making you a quasi babyface, because people feel the emotion and people see it on your face and they know you're not lying. You're just, you know, kind of moving the goalposts, so to speak. And, you know, I'm reminded of, you know, Chris Jericho back in that run with Shawn Michaels, and everything he was saying felt like truth. And then there was that weird kind of crowd response that kind of got behind him until he punched Shawn's wife in the face. And that's kind of how I feel with MJF, is I don't think he's turning babyface. I think what he's doing is he's getting the crowd to buy into his emotion, and at some point he's going to snap it and make him an even bigger heel. So he's been fantastic since he came back. I think he knew he had to step up and welcome the opportunity to become an even bigger star, because, you know, he's referencing the 2024 contract negotiations. Like, he's just generating himself more and more money as this plays out. So it's been fantastic. It's been great. But, you know, I would expect anything less from a guy like MJF or a guy like William Regal when it comes to a promo battle.
More signs tea leaves being pointed towards the babyface turn here of MJF is that he announced that he will cash in his poker chip at the Full Gear pay-per-view. He has announced that he will take on Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship at Full Gear, and he did it, you know, weeks before the pay-per-view takes place. We discussed on the show when we thought he was going to do it, you know, the heel thing would be to do is after a match, which he teased at the end of the Hangman and Moxley match. We'll get to, you know, we'll cover that very briefly, the Hangman injury as well, in just a little bit. And then, you know, played off that promo back and forth with Regal, cashed in, said he's going to do it, he's a man, all this stuff. That's babyface stuff, Dr. Trey. That is not something a heel does. I was surprised. Yeah, I mean, the last couple of weeks, we've talked about on the show, I am surprised that they are going in the direction of this by the way that they're doing it. Like, they're not letting the fans turn him AEW is leaning into it a little bit. They're leaning into following the match with Wheeler Yuta. He nearly shakes Wheeler Yuta in his hand. He stops the firm from attacking Wheeler Yuta. He said, "I didn't need you guys." He's telling Stokely Hathaway that, he's putting Stokely Hathaway in his place. I think during a promo on Rampage this past Friday, I can't remember if it was Rampage or Dynamite. And then he has this whole thing where he cashes in the chip to the face and says, "I'm going to do it in a couple weeks." You know, I mean, this is not the chicken shit heel that MJF always was. I mean, he went weeks teasing this. He was going to cash in. And then he decides, "Well, I'm going to do it, you know, face to face, mano a mano. I'm going to do it the right way." Why the hell would one of the best heels in the last 5 to 10 years, natural heels, do it this way other than a babyface turn? I'm surprised with the way that they're leaning into this, Dr. Trey, with him becoming a babyface.
First of all, I'm never going to buy into him as a babyface until he becomes a full-fledged babyface. And
I don't know if we'll ever get that, though, right? I think it'll be more like Rock 99.
Yeah, I still believe everything's a work until it happens, so I believe this is all a setup. Like, to me, this is – first of all, why would you even bring in the firm if this is the route you're going to go, right? Like, the whole Casino Royal – ladder battle, I don't know what the hell that thing was even called, but that whole thing to play off him coming out dressed as the devil with a whole new group around him less than 2 months ago to now not use them and quasi disqualify them, to me it's all a ruse to set up for Full Gear. So until you get, you know, MJF getting beat down by some heels at some point,
okay,
I'm not going to buy into it. So to me, this is all just a big elaborate setup. So that way, when it does happen, it makes him the biggest heel in. I mean, he's arguably the biggest heel in wrestling right now, anyway, because there's not any great prototypical heels out there, anyway. But this just put him on a whole different level.
It's very funny that you just said that, because I was thinking this to myself. Part of me wonders if MJF doesn't win the championship at Full Gear, and the reason being is because the firm has turned on him, that is like, okay, this guy is now a babyface.
Yeah.
Like I can really foresee that happening right now. And a lot of this ties into the first story from the beginning of the show as well. I wonder if this was the direction AEW was planning on doing when Punk was still involved in the whole entire thing as AEW World Champion. Like, was this the plan, or were they going to lean into it a little bit more with him and the firm? Because his association with the firm, and I know it's a stable on retainer, really hasn't been that prominent on television. They haven't been focused on television all that much outside of Ethan Page here and there, Lee Moriarty here and there. I can't remember Morrissey Cage. Match.
Cage. No, Cage is in the embassy.
Cage is with the embassy. Yeah. I wonder if that's the direction they go, because that would put him over the edge if the firm like takes him out.
Yeah, but then you have him be backed up by William Regal and the Blackpool Combat Club, and then there'd be another big one.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think he would do that. I don't think he would do Blackpool Combat Club. I think it would be very reminiscent of Rock 99, where, you know, Rock was still acting the same way he did in the corporation, and prior to that from, you know, the Nation of Domination, that brief babyface run, and then he wins a title at 1998 Survivor Series by joining the corporation, like that type of deal, Rock. But he also didn't say, you know, this isn't Sing Along with the Rock anymore and stuff like that. Like, I think it'll be more rockish. But to this point, to add more to this, according to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter's Dave Meltzer, and with help from Wrestling Inc., however, MJF isn't exactly eager to shift his character's alignment, as we've seen recently. Quote, "I know he doesn't want to turn," end quote, Meltzer said on the Wrestling Observer Radio. While Meltzer opined that, quote, "Of course, at some point he's going to turn," end quote, he also said that MJF's reaction of good behavior, a rejection of good behavior, is generating revenue for the promotion, which currently has more top baby faces than top heels. And in any event, audiences aren't growing tired of him. Quote, "He can be a heel and they can cheer and they cheer him. That's fine," end quote, he continued. "Ric Flair was like that his whole career. Whoever the people cheer for, that's fine, as long as the dynamic there's there that people want to pay tickets. I don't care if they cheer for both guys. I don't care if they boo both guys. I don't care if they boo the babyface if they're paying for tickets and they're watching the TV. The crowd could do whatever they want." So MJF doesn't want to do this, but But you're seeing MJF point to the crowd, right? He did it at Dynamite. He's saluting the crowd. He literally saluted the crowd on Dynamite. Like, that is not MJF. That's what made that Long Island show of December 2021 at AEW Dynamite so interesting, because it was the only time he really truly acted like a babyface was in front of his hometown crowd. Prior to that, autograph signings on television, if you saw him in public, he did not treat you like, you know, he was a quote normal person. He was in character all the time, because as he says in a lot of podcast interviews lately, this is me. This is who I am. I don't necessarily believe that, but this is who he says he is. I've heard a lot of MJF interviews lately. He's been acting a lot more down to earth. I got to be honest, Dr. Trey, this is something that needed to happen for MJF to continue to ascend in his career, especially if his aspirations to be an entertainment star, which I would imagine he does based on things that we've read and heard and even heard from him, that he started needing to turn a little bit. But this is the reason why I loved MJF in the beginning, is like he was that Roddy Piper heel, and Piper did it eventually as well, that we hadn't had in wrestling in 25, 30 years. But here we are. I mean, he is leaning to it. The company's leaning into it. It's kind of weird to see, but it's cool at the same time, because I'm getting those vibes where the fans forcibly turned Steve Austin and The Rock into baby faces when they were always, you know, your natural one-on-one heel.
Yeah. Okay. So you and I have had 13 years of friendship here, and you, I know that you're more the historian than I am. Didn't Rock do the same thing with Mankind, only to turn on Mankind and join the corporation though?
So that was 98. Yeah. Yeah. So Rock, turned on the Nation of Domination, summer of 98, was doing a little bit of a run as a baby face, then got into the tournament, Deadly Games tournament for the vacant WWE championship. And they turned, Mick Foley was with the corporation. They turned on Mick, Shane, Vince, and The Rock at that pay-per-view, you know, a year later, doing the Montreal screw job, ringing the bell, sharpshooter, the whole nine yards.
See, that's, and I kind of feel more like that with this whole MJF thing, that this is kind of a mini, like a test run to then turn him back, you know, more solid heel. Because like you just mentioned, there's more baby faces on this show than there are heels. Like, you have to have that person out there for the good guys to fight. Otherwise, it's just UFC. It's just good guys against good guys, and, you know, everybody's just, you know, mellow and happy, I guess. Like, you need those antagonists out there that good guys have to overcome. And until you can build up some other heels out there, like right now, like to me, like you have two main event heels, you have MJF and you have Jericho. That's it. There's nobody else that I look at and go, that's a main event heel on the AEW roster. Now you flip it to the other side and you're like, oh damn, they got Hangman, Moxley, Bryan Danielson, Punk, if he's around, like they're overloaded on that one side. So then if you flipped, you know, MJF to the babyface side, you got one heel. Like, that's it. You have to elevate like an entire mid-card of heels, and that's really hard to pull off. So I just look at it on paper, like if you're like, this is like pros and cons. You know, whenever you have a hard decision, you always, you want your pros to outnumber your cons. But in wrestling, when you're laying stuff out like this, you want your baby faces and heels to kind of be even throughout. If you look at the entire roster, they're even. It's just that the baby faces typically have been trumping their heels for the most part. And then you kind of, you're pushing your heels down. So to me, I feel like this is a test run. It's a way for him to make some extra money as well, because, you know, MJF shirts sell more when he's a little more grounded. But go back to that Buffalo show from about right after All Out, and he came out in the Josh Allen jersey, and he was playing to the Buffalo crowd. That, but then by the end of the show, he was crapping on the Buffalo crowd. So I think this is kind of them testing things and seeing how the crowd responds, and then you can book it from there. I just don't see, like, if you're telling me that Jericho's part of creative, that Jericho's for MJF turning babyface right now. Like, I don't see it unless he's being selfish and wants to be the main heel on the show.
Well, Jericho came out after MJF returned it All Out, and they were talking about MJF's return. I forget where I saw it. I don't know if it was on this podcast or an interview that he did. And that he was telling MJF, like, whether you like it or not, you are going to be a top babyface.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. MJF is going to be a top babyface, but you have to have your roster balanced, Because if he turns babyface, he's going to feud with, you know, the firm. Like, he's going to feud with Morrissey. Like, I like W. Morrissey. I like him. Would I buy a pay-per-view to see MJF against W. Morrissey? Would I buy a pay-per-view to see MJF against Lee Moriarty? No. But would I buy a pay-per-view to see MJF against Bryan Danielson or Jon Moxley or even Claudio or, you know, CM Punk or any of their top baby faces? Absolutely. So that's where I get into is, you know, you have to kind of think about where this roster's at right now if they're going to do a full baby face turn for MJF.
It's interesting because, like, even thinking about it out loud as you're talking about it, it just feels like there's holes in the roster in general right now. I mean, Moxley just got done taking on Hangman Page, and a top baby face of the company, this past week's edition of AW Dynamite. It's interesting. I mean, there's these things. You pointed to Buffalo when MJF was at Grand Slam. You know, he's in the hometown, the Northeast, New York City metro area, and he's calling the fans his devil worshippers. I mean, I was shocked at Cincinnati that he was pointing to the crowd. I almost thought that he didn't realize they were still on the air because of everything that happened with the Hangman Adam Page stuff. Like, I think that was towards the end.
He came out post-match.
Yeah, which we'll talk about here briefly in just a second. But he came out post-match. That was a lot of the filler. But after he said, "I'm cashing in," he's pointing to the crowd and saluting. Like, I was like, whoa, this is some wild stuff to see from MJF. Very, very different. But if it was purposeful, I mean, we've seen like this weird turn here and there. And they've been teasing this with MJF since he's been in All Elite Wrestling. Go back to 2019. I think it was Full Gear, the match Cody versus Jericho, where if Cody lost, he wouldn't be AEW World Champion again. And MJF, prior to that on Dynamite, made the save for Cody Rhodes. And then at the pay-per-view, he didn't. Over earlier this year, the crying promo, you know, I was there live when he cut the promo where Punk came out and he's like, "Is this all real?" And they followed up at Daly's place and he turned on Punk then. You know, you brought Buffalo. They've done this before where they've swerved. I don't know if they could do another swerve, Dr. Trey. Like, I don't know that at Full Gear, we get this other swerve where MJF's like, "You fell for it again. You guys are fools. You thought I was doing this." Like, this one seems legitimate to me.
Okay. Well, I guess this is one of the few times that we just agree to disagree. Because, like I said, until I see MJF getting beat down by a group of heels, I'm not buying it. Like, the guy is money as a heel. He draws people in. He makes you want to buy, you know, the pay-per-view. Like, even that Cincinnati stuff. Like, you know, you mentioned Moxley against Hangman. Did anybody really care about that match? No, we were sitting there waiting to see what MJF was going to do, if he was going to cash in or not. Like, that's where we're at right now when they do these babyface matches, is we're just waiting to see what MJF does. So, and that to me is one of the cool aspects of it. But once again, like, if I got a whole roster of babyfaces, I need somebody to chase him down. This is kind of Hogan and the NWO. Like, when Hogan was running the NWO, there was like basically one major heel, and then you had a whole bunch of babyfaces that kept trying to overcome it. That's how you build babyface stars, but that's also how you can build ancillary heel characters as well. And that's what we got with, like, when, you know, when Luger was in the NWO and, you know, Hall and Nash, everybody else, is that the sub characters on the babyface side that were trying to get to Hogan still couldn't get past the wall of NWO guys. That's booking 101. Is that's how you make a top heel, and that's how you build up babyfaces, is just put a group around them that they have to try to overcome until they get to that guy. So that's that. In my head, that's the most logical sense of booking, is if you're gonna have MJF be your top heel, you put a crowd around them and make the fans feel like they're part of it, and then yank it away, and that makes them more disheartened and hate him even more.
Switching gears here towards that match, Moxley and Hangman Page from Dynamite, obviously scary stuff. It was like 8 to 10 minutes left in the show, clothesline, concussion, potential neck injury, you know, stretchered out. We all know the whole deal there with Hangman Page for anybody that watched AEW Dynamite. It was, I mean, props to AEW for doing what they could to fill the gap there at the end of the show. If this was in the middle of the show, obviously it would be a different story. They could, you know, get the match out there and then presses the, you know, fill in the gaps as they move on. This was at the end of the show, and you don't have a backup plan for the last segment of your show. especially when there's going to be some sort of execution taking place for a major storyline, as we saw with MJF at the end of the program. Scary situation, Dr. Trey. Great to hear Hangman Page tweeted out on Wednesday night. Great to hear he's doing all right. All the best to him. Just scary stuff and stuff you don't like to see on your wrestling program at any time.
Yeah, I mean, the whole concussion thing right now is so prevalent everywhere. I mean, did you watch the Tua game when Tua got hurt?
I did, yeah, and I saw his press conference yesterday.
And then you see, like, when his hand seized up, like, stuff like that, man, just shakes you to your core. And, you know, that's one of the things that I've argued with the guys about in pro wrestling is you want to make sure everything you're doing is as safe as possible because of stuff like this, because you're doing it without a net, because you're doing it on live television, like, you know, when you're selling things, like, you don't have to do the flip on a clothesline, the old Rikishi move. You don't have to do that. You can take a clothesline and do a good bump out of it and safely and not risk hurting yourself as much. It just hurts my heart to see people getting injured doing stuff that they don't need to do in a wrestling match, and they can do a much safer version and get the exact same result out of it. I'm glad that he's okay. I'm glad that he's going through concussion protocol to make sure he's all right, because he's, you know, tremendously talented individual in the wrestling business. I just hate seeing guys take unnecessary risks for what wouldn't really accomplish nearly as much as if they just did the simpler, easier way. Because at the end of the day, we're not supposed to be hurting our brothers and sisters in the ring. And over the last few years, we've seen just so many people get hurt on dumb stuff. It just blows me away that, you know, guys are like, yeah, I'll absolutely do that. It's like, and then they get hurt. It's like, man, just, you could have just taken the simple flat back and had the same result. So, but good to hear that he's up and moving around. And I hate it for everybody involved. I know, you know, a guy like John Moxley, he's probably beating himself up for a few days, you know, for a while, you know, worrying about it, everything else, because nothing about it looked out of place other than Hangman trying to do that flip bump out of it. So, but just glad he's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. There's videos out there of referee Paul Turner and John Moxley praying for Hangman Page while he was still in the ring. Terrible, terrible stuff. It's sad situation, but glad to hear he's all right. Could have been a lot worse, obviously. We hope for a speedy recovery and hope to see him back in the ring here sooner rather than later. Switching gears to WWE, this past Friday's edition of SmackDown, we saw the return promo from Bray Wyatt, Dr. Trey. He was... cut a very emotional promo, new entrance, very similar to what we saw at Extreme Rules, new theme music, maybe a similar character from what we saw from the Firefly Funhouse days. There's a difference between Bray Wyatt and someone in a mask. What did you think of the return promo, and what did you think the direction of it as we start thinking of where this is heading long-term for Bray Wyatt?
I felt bad for Bray a little bit. I mean, it was great to see him out there. It was great to see him emotional and talking from the heart. I felt like they were running short on time and they kind of cut the promo a little short to go to the video package. But, I'm really happy and really excited to see where this goes. And one of my favorite aspects is just seeing what people are putting out on, you know, social media for where they think the story goes. And, you know, one of my favorite things I saw was, like, this might be Bray feuding with himself, you know, and it's something that I brought up, a couple of years ago, like, how great would it be if we saw The Fiend versus Bray Wyatt, you know, and they were just fighting themselves in a cinematic style match, because that's something that since the pandemic era ended, we've gotten away from are those cinematic type matches. So I don't know if it's going to be a whole stable like that. That promo kind of made me feel like we weren't getting a heel Bray Wyatt faction, because he, you know, his mask character interrupted himself. So I kind of feel like that might be where we go with this, is that Bray ends up feuding with all the different forms of himself. And because somebody brought up a great point, like, you know, how all those characters are different incarnations of Bray Wyatt throughout his time in WWE. So it's kind of good. That might be the route they go, where it ends up being Bray fighting versions of himself. And if you're going to have him be, that was the thing, like putting him on SmackDown when you have a guy like Roman Reigns on that brand and you're not putting them together, that kind of makes me feel like they're trying to keep them separate for a while. So if Bray's feuding with himself, that keeps him away from Roman.
I feel like the booking of Bray Wyatt can be very similar to the booking of MJF presently, because it's very, it's important that both companies execute this really well. I think WWE has a very massive grand scheme plan on where they want to go with Bray Wyatt right now, as opposed to maybe the direction of AEW and MJF. But this first couple pages of this new chapter, Dr. Trey, has me interested, which is what the goal is for WWE, and wants me to see more and how this gets executed on this Friday's edition of SmackDown. So I liked it. It's leaving me guessing, leaving me wanting more, and I think that's what WWE wants to accomplish. So we'll have to see where this continues to go in the coming weeks on the SmackDown brand now that Bray Wyatt is back in the WWE fold. And then lastly here, Dr. Trey, I want to just get our preview predictions for NXT Halloween Havoc this Saturday, October 22nd from the WWE Performance Center in Orlando, Florida. Dr. Trey, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you have been watching NXT again recently. So are you liking what you're seeing before we get into the preview predictions?
Yeah, I mean, so at least the guys they brought over from NXT UK are guys I knew, like, you know, the JD McDonagh, the Ilya Dragunovs, you know, the Coffees and Wolfgangs and all those guys I'm familiar with. So at least it wasn't a lot of some of the guys that I'd never heard of, which I like the depth now that show has throughout the entire roster. You look at the heavyweight division, the mid-card division, the tag team, the women's, there's depth everywhere now. So I feel like it's a more well-rounded show. We're not doing these like weird, I mean, there's still some characters out there that I'm not huge fans of as far as like the gimmicks with them. But for the most part, it feels like a much more solid show than it did 6 months ago.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and I'm glad you're checking it out because it has been a very good show recently. So looking forward to this Saturday's premium live event, NXT Halloween Havoc. Let's get to the first match here. Spin the wheel, make the deal match. We don't know what it will be. Apollo Crews taking on Grayson Waller. I'll kick it off here, Dr. Trey. I have Apollo Crews winning this one.
Yeah, me too. Like anytime you do an eye injury angle, then I kind of go with the guy that got injured. So I'll take Apollo. Plus, if Grayson is Mercy the Buzzard, you would need a reason to write him off TV. So I'll take Apollo right now because of the possibility that Grayson might move up.
Next match is an ambulance match between Julius Creed and Damon Kemp. If Julius loses, Brutus Creed will have to leave NXT. Dr. Trey, let's start with you. Who do you like in this one?
This one's weird because, like, why? Like, if Brutus leaves, does that mean Julius stays and they split up the Creed brothers? Because all I've heard from the people in WWE is how much they love Brutus and Julius. Like, they like Road Dogg and Ryan Katz swear by the Creed brothers. And so much so that they did a thing on a top tag teams, and they had the Creed brothers as their number two tag team currently in professional wrestling. So wow. I'm going to take Damon Kemp just because I think you want to keep the Creed brothers together. So I'll take I'll take Julius getting the win so that way the Brutus doesn't have to leave.
Yeah, you confused me there for a second.
Yeah, I'm
going to take Damon Kemp because, yeah. Anyway, I'm actually going to take Damon Kemp. I think that they have bigger plans for Julius Creed to be a single star. I've mentioned it here on the show when we talk NXT from time to time that I just think this is a guy that could be leading the brand in the future. So I'm going to take Damon Kemp to break up the Creed brothers. I don't know what happens to Brutus Creed, but I just think long-term Julius Creed is going to be more of a single star than a tag team star. Next match here, spin the wheel, make the deal, a weapons wild match as Roxanne Perez takes on Cora Jade. I'm going to take Cora Jade in this one, Dr. Trey.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Cora as well. Like, weapons matches gives the heels a chance to get the victories underhandedly, so I will take Cora getting the win underhandedly. To beat Roxanne, who did she had a really impressive performance on SmackDown a couple weeks ago, so maybe they're looking at moving her up, you know, pretty quickly as well.
Next match is the ladder match for the vacant NXT North American Championship. Carmelo Hayes, Oro Mensah, Wes Lee, Von Wagner, and Nathan Frazier. Dr. Trey, who do you like in this one?
I love that I have to go first on this one because
it's tough, right?
I know, because I can literally see any one of these guys winning, maybe except for Oro Mensah, just because he hasn't been there long enough. I think I'm going to take Wes Lee. I have a bias towards Wes and because I've known him for so long, but just the way they've done the storytelling with him over the last couple months. I just feel like this is his chance to shine on a singles level and kind of put his tag team division behind him. So I think I'm going to take Wes.
Yeah, this is a tough one to call. I would love to pick Carmelo Hayes to get another run with this, but I feel like they're going to go the direction of Ron Wagner. I think Oral Mensa and Wesley kind of teased a tag team on NXT the TV this past week, and Frazier and Wagner have been feuding with one another, and I think Hayes is bound for the main roster by the end of the year. So I'm going to go with Von Wagner to win the NXT North American Championship. Next match here is for the NXT Women's Championship. Mandy Rose defends against Alba Fire. Like Carmelo Hayes, I think Mandy Rose is headed back to the main roster here soon. So I'm going to take Alba Fire to become the new NXT Women's Champion, Dr. Trey.
Yeah, I'm taking Alba as well. Not so much as I think the Toxic Attraction is getting moved up. It's just because if you move them up, like the women's roster is pretty loaded all over the place. Like where does you don't want to waste Mandy and Toxic Attraction on the main roster. You got Damage Control on one side. Do you move Toxic Attraction to SmackDown to balance it out? Like, how does that play out? So I'm going to take Alba Fire just because I like the run and the weird thing she's doing with the bat. I don't know the whole story behind the bat, but she's like a ginger sting right now.
Without the face paint. Yeah. Because they don't need them. We don't need them. I'm a ginger. We don't need face paint like Sting Tad. And then finally, triple threat match for the NXT Championship. Bron Breakker defends against Ilya Dragunov and J.D. McDonagh. Dr. Trey, who do you like in this one?
Yeah, this is another one that's hard for me because like on paper, I take Bron Breakker, but then you're like, wait, this is the second time McDonagh's getting a shot, even though Ilya's factored in. Like, how does this whole thing work out? It's just hard to bet against Bron Breakker right now, so I'm going to take Breakker getting the win.
Yeah, I'm taking Bron Breakker as well. The reason being is they alluded that the last time Bron Breakker was in a triple threat match, he lost. I think it's likely that Bron Breakker retains. I cannot see him dropping the NXT championship presently. So there you go. NXT Halloween Havoc preview and predictions this Saturday, WWE Performance Center on Peacock. For those who have it here in the United States, WWE Network for everywhere else that is listening internationally here to SRTU. And of course, we will recap and review it all on next week's edition of the So Real Toast Show. I'm taking a look at the calendar here. Do we have to do Crown Jewel next week? I know it's November 5th.
Is it a question of?
It's in two weeks. When they have a dream match on there, Dr. Trey, of Roman Reigns and Logan Paul, something you and I have been talking about since day one of this podcast, that's something we just can't ignore. I mean, we didn't know who Logan Paul was when we first started. We didn't know who Roman Reigns was, but we always talked about if there was ever a time for a social media star and the top WWE champion of the last decade to battle it out in Saudi Arabia, boy, oh boy, do we want to see it. So that's in 2 weeks.
I thought you were referencing that we get to see Dominic Mysterio in the ring with AJ Styles again in that six-man tag as our dream match, because God knows I love me some Dominic Mysterio in the ring with people like the OC.
Can I just say that I think Dominic's character is so much better right now. He is definitely channeling Uncle Eddie.
Do I think his character is better? Yes, but has his in-ring work improved in the last 2 years?
I think so. I do. I honestly do.
I had this debate the other day with somebody. Like, to me, I he can do all the moves. It's just he never does anything crisply. Like, everything looks like he's going through the motions. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, I just never see that real intensity unless he's doing something with his dad. Outside of that, I just feel like he's just kind of going through the motions, and there's no crispness to anything he does.
I know what fans are thinking right now. Listen to the pod. Dr. Trey, you want to see him in the match with Roman Reigns and Logan Paul. Yes. Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
I want a Shane McMahon Dominic Mysterio match. So that way we both just sort of go, you and I can just basically flame the entire match.
It would probably be the first time ever that we don't decide to watch a WWE match during a premium live event in the history of the pod. So. With that said, let's get a couple plugs and sponsors out of the way. You can download the show every Thursday at realguyradio.com, WrestleChatNet on Twitter, and the Still Real Toast Show iTunes feed. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to help us climb the charts on iTunes. You can follow us individually on Twitter for myself at SRTUJeff, and for Dr. Trey Franklin at the Dr. Trey. And of course, don't forget to follow the show on Twitter at SRTU Podcast. With that being said, what is going on in the wonderful world of Dr. Trey Franklin this week?
Well, like Jeff said, you can follow me on Twitter at TheDrTrey. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram, Dr. Trey Franklin. When you're on Facebook, check out Rocket City Championship Wrestling. They have a big show coming up this Saturday. They should have a big show coming up. But also, just go out there and support your local independent wrestling shows. You see your MJFs before they become MJFs. You can see your Darbys before they become Darbys. You can see your Austin Theories before they become Austin Theories. So just get online, check out, find out your local independent wrestling show, and go support those guys that are busting their tails for hot dogs and handshakes, as the old wrestling analogy goes.
So there you go. Support all the great things at Support SRTU, and spread the word about the Show Realtor Show to your friends who enjoy professional wrestling like yourselves. Thank you for downloading this week's edition of the show. We'll be back next week once again on October 27th, recapping and reviewing everything from NXT Halloween Havoc and everything that is taking place in the world of professional wrestling. And who knows, maybe we'll get into a greater debate about Dominic Mysterio. Until next week, for Dr. Trey Franklin, I'm Jeff Pack. Thanks for listening. This is the Still World of the Show. Thank you.